Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is your regular Wednesday host, Kim Justice, although you might not recognize me. It's been a month since I've been here for real. That's one advantage, I guess, of being here weekly for almost 14 years, is I have a lot of really good, even if I do say so myself, guests and tapes that I drew back on, and I pulled them all out pre-COVID, so they were from 2019, back in 2017, all kinds of different topics, and hopefully you got some good takeaways from those shows, but I'm really happy to be back again live tonight, and it happens to be on the last Wednesday of the month, and so my co-host for the last Wednesday, Simon Lewis, is also here with me tonight, and he's been gone for quite some time. Both of us have been struggling with health problems. So the answer is, once you have your brain injury and you get to whatever level of recovery you're going to get to, does that mean the price that you paid for that horrible facing your mortality moment ends the grief you're going to encounter physically and mentally, spiritually, emotionally? No. As a matter of fact, in both of our cases, it meant that when it did come knocking again, that the old saying, when it rains, it pours. So I'm going to bring Simon on in just a moment. And he's also live. We're both live tonight and happy to be live and back on the airwaves. So a couple different things. I know that Halloween is a week away. In fact, I believe it is a week from tonight that it's Halloween. But that means this show is the last show we'd be having before Halloween. Now, I will tell you that I have about as many Halloween decorations as I do Christmas decorations. And we decorated early because I was going to be having surgery, and I knew, you know, I was in a mood where why bother? I wasn't going to get out any of the stuff, wasn't going to have the holiday, going to hold my breath till I turn blue. But my wonderful husband suggested that it would be more cheerful for me to be around the house recovering if I could look at our decorations. They're a combination of fall-themed and Halloween-themed. And so the weekend before surgery, we got everything out, and he was right. It's, you know, you take out decorations you put away that you only see once a year, and you know your favorites, but you don't think about it after you've put everything away and another year goes by. So there's smiles on the face of seeing, oh, Uncle Charlie, the haunted clown, and many of the other things that I got out. I had gotten my fingernails painted black with an orange one on each hand that a pumpkin face was drawn on, and I was all in the Halloween spirit, and it was spooky, and I was scared, like you're supposed to be, I guess, when you're about to go into surgery. But I was decked for Halloween. And now I've got to tell you, the surgery's over. I've been recovering. I'm still enjoying our decorations. But I did my nails yesterday, and frankly, I was sick of Halloween. So I painted them fall colors, and Halloween is already kind of come and gone for me. And maybe for a lot of you, in that it's not like it was when we were kids and it was safe enough and we went out and knocked on neighborhood doors and said trick or treat in our cute costumes and people handed out candy and it was a thing 100 years ago when I was a kid. Now parents aren't feeling that it's safe enough to do that, and so there are more gatherings and malls, parties at people's homes. It's not the old ring the doorbell and ask for treats anymore. And as a matter of fact, on the news last night, I was worried, actually, for my husband. I talked to him about it this morning, and you know how men are, he kind of poo-pooed me off, but I saw on the news last night that there was a small silver car, looked like it had a couple people in the front, but the person in the back had on a Mike Myers Halloween mask, so he was disguised. And in three different places in a proximity, not of here exactly where I live, but not really far away, this guy jumped out of the back seat of the car, and the first person he attacked was a woman getting out of her car in her driveway. He grabbed her purse, grabbed her phone, threw her to the ground, roughed her up a bit, ran back. All this took about 2 seconds, got back in the car, and they sped off. He went, attacked someone else. Don't remember that one. But the third one was a 79-year-old man who was just walking out on a walk in his neighborhood. And this guy got out and attacked him, knocked him to the ground, and almost, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, the guy had a hammer in his hand when he got out in each of these occasions. Almost tore the man's ear off. They did interview him. He had a mark on his face where he had been hit, and he actually got teary, you know, that he was just walking through the neighborhood and that this happened. Interestingly, there were witnesses. They all happened in neighborhoods. It wasn't dark yet. It was dusk enough for people to tell it was a silver car and a tall guy with a mask on who couldn't be otherwise identified. So I guess no one could help. But people actually saw, and these weren't kids that we've been worried about for years. It was adults, three adults that were attacked. And so the reason I said that about my husband is he's a early riser like I am not. He gets up about 4:30 in the morning and he walks ever since. Very proud of him, unlike me who got into fight, flight, or freeze when the pandemic came up. My husband started walking around the neighborhood every single day, got up to a few miles, and he does that probably at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, hopefully, these horrible people that they did not catch, don't get up that early. But in any case, I told him the story and talked to him about some pepper spray or something to take with him. It's a shame when even adults have to worry about walking in their own neighborhood, which brings me to masks. And I'm going to bring Simon on in 1 second, but masks do what? They conceal who we really are. And sometimes it doesn't take a physical mask. It takes a way of being, of acting, of performing, to conceal our authentic self, our real feelings, and say, I'm ready for this. I'm not scared. Not talk about the things that go bump in the night that we're afraid of. Not talk about the PTSD. Act like everything's okay. Not talk about or acknowledge the loneliness and some of the feelings that we go through to others, and whether that's out of denial, we don't want to see it ourselves or acknowledge it or don't know how to deal with ourselves, so we put that mask on, or we just want others to not take on the burden, and so we act like nothing's wrong and aren't honest. So tonight we're going to do a couple of different things. We are going to talk about, we called it Wicked Wednesday because I thought if we were going to have a Halloween show in any way, shape, or form, that we'd be doing it tonight, and I planned on having a little fun, and we're going to do that in the second hour, have some fun. I suggested in the program notes, and for those of you that didn't read them, I'm going to suggest it now, that you think very hard of a costume, and we're on radio, so it's not like we're on YouTube, and I can really test you if you've got that costume on or not. But I invited you to wear a costume to the show just for fun tonight because you're not going out trick-or-treating next Tuesday. Some of you might be going to Halloween parties, but if you're like Simon and I, we're not quite up to it. So if we put on a costume, it might as well be here on the radio. And I talked about a costume that you have on listening to the show and calling in and telling us what your costume is and why you chose that. And we're going to do the same. And then we were going to play a game. We are going to play a game about some of the worst Halloween movies ever made. And we can share some of the favorite Halloween movies that we have. Like Charlie Brown, right? I just watched that the other night. Started out where he only had the Christmas one. Oh, The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Not a movie, but light-hearted take on Halloween. So we're going to have some fun in the second part of the show. But we'll be a little more serious in the beginning when I bring Simon on and talk about some of those themes that I alluded to a few moments ago. You know, it's been really tough on all of us. I mentioned that Simon and I have both had different health issues that we've been fighting for a while now. We just got done and aren't really done. It's just a political year, so they quit talking about it. But 2 years anyway of a pandemic, the likes that the world hadn't seen for 100 years, wound up a 20-year military conflict just in time to have the world in turmoil again, like dominoes in the Middle East and other places, and some real threats when they're talking on the news alluding to things I think should be kept in the private meeting room, like they did with COVID, you know, originally. They didn't want to panic everyone. And now they're talking about fear, being afraid of making certain moves, and World War III kind of talk. Geez, is there anything else globally that could get dumped on us? And then personally, the things that we deal with that trigger some things that make us fearful, that make us feel lonely, that elicit a lot of negative fear, and when it's relentless, like that pandemic and this year, people deciding, do I get a vaccine, do I not? Do I get an RSV vaccine, a new one, a third one, or not? Do I do the flu shot or not? Did the 2 years wear me out on these vaccines and I'm sick of the whole damn thing? Or am I still scared to death and glued at home most of the time, but I'm going to get every shot I can get my hand on just because I don't want to go to the hospital? Because I've been to one in the last few weeks, not for that, any of those things, but I certainly don't want to go when it's peak season around here. Now, I said I'm from Middle America, and we had some really nice weather, but today it changed, and it looks like a slide going down in the rest of the week and the extended forecast into next week. We're talking about close to freezing temperatures at night and highs in the 40s. And 50s, low 50s, excuse me, high 30s, middle 40s, and maybe a high of 50-something here or there. So we're definitely, you know, have gotten in the closet to find the jackets and the hats and some things that we're going to need as people start going back inside. It was pretty easy to forget, like they've forgotten to talk about the status. The commercials are still on. Run out and make Pfizer a little more money. make sure you get those shots, but we're not going to talk about the state of occurrence or the disease at all. We're not going to talk about it, but the commercials are going to be there. It's going to be real vague. Have fun trying to figure that out. It was easy to forget around here because we were outside again, you know, for spring and summer and enjoying life and trying to shake that off and relax again back into, gee, can you even go back to life as you knew it after that? Or do you adapt and settle in to life as you know it now? And then the aftershocks, those ones like Simon and I were having with our health. And it's like, I thought I was going to get a break. You know, and now the weather is getting ready to change. People will be going back inside. And it'll be time to make decisions again. And nobody's giving input. Different doctors are giving different opinions. And I find that confusing. So in any case, I'm going to drop back and then I'm going to bring Simon on. As I said, this is a time of year where a lot of people start experiencing seasonal affective disorder. They like the pretty leaves changing color. The last burst of life and color, the mums, those kind of things in places like this. Simon's got a different situation going where he lives. But pretty soon, those flowers and bright colors are going to be in the rearview mirror. They're not going to be out anymore. The color will be gone. It'll be cold. We'll have to be inside and confront life on life's terms, which is not easy, especially if your health has been compromised, and especially when it probably helped compromise our health because we didn't get up between all the turmoil. But recovery now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, every Wednesday night. If you'd like to know more about me, check out my website, inaflash.org. Hopefully your life can change, right? Inaflash.org. And Simon, that I'm going to bring on right now, my co-host, the last Wednesday of each month. You can find out more about Simon at riseandshinethebook.com and Simon Lewis, that's LEWIS.US. And with that, I am going to bring on Simon. Sorry to keep you waiting, Simon, but welcome back.
Kim, no problem being kept waiting. It's such an honor, and I'm so happy to hear that you're doing well and to I have to start by saying 14 years on air weekly is a record to be very proud of. There are not many hosts who are on the air, if any, 14 years running. And in a show which is going to start with some of the difficulties of fear and the Halloween season, I do think you deserve a very big shout out for maintaining such a remarkable record of service to the brain injured community. A note of continuity in a world that is changing the whole time and doing such a lot of good. And I'm so glad that you're back from surgery, which is always difficult. I've had some medical issues. I always tend to think that other people's medical issues sound way harder than mine. To your point, I want to go through some of the great things that you said. It is a question of taking everything a day at a time. The four A's of recovery are always true. It never gets easier. And I'm thinking of a gentleman who I was just recently being told about, who's 26 and has experienced an insult to the brain. And the person who I was communicating with said it's a tough sell to persuade him to listen to a podcast about injury to the brain. And there is a reason that brain injury is referred to sometimes as the silent epidemic. One of the things about the pandemic that is so very different is that it's not silent. People who are suffering from long COVID tend, for example, to talk about it, and there's a lot of documentation. But the pressure to be silent about medical adversity does continue. And there are plenty of people who hide their symptoms of long COVID when there are reasons for hope about long COVID. They think about half the people who get COVID have long COVID. They're finding interesting genetic components about who gets it. They found, for example, that people with a certain genetic makeup are significantly more likely to get COVID. It's known that COVID is very attracted to nerve tissue, which is very common. Viruses really like nerve tissue as a place to hang out. Now, that's not the right medical term. And we'll be serious in the first half, and in the second half, we'll have some fun. But we're in the first half where we're talking seriously about reason for hope and hope for reason. But there are many viruses that hang out in nerve tissue, things like herpes and AIDS, and they are very hard to find. And then they get into the brain, which causes that whole range of issues. And everybody's familiar, for example, with COVID and the loss of smell. And what is that? That's the COVID hanging out in brain tissue associated with the nose, where the sinuses connect between the brain and the outside world. That, I think, is called anosmia. As for people in Michael Myers masks mugging and attacking people, yes, I mean, I'm proud of Gary for poo-pooing, but we've always lived in dangerous times. And if there's any opportunity, I used to say to my film students that making a film was like entering the America's Cup, that unless everything is lashed to the deck, everything is shipshape and secure before you start a film or television production, it'll wear loose, it'll break loose, it'll be gone in a flash. And sadly, if one lets one's guard down, America, or the world, I should say, is becoming a little bit more that way with each passing year. Inflation, which is a big problem for many people, mortgage premiums, payments are going up, insurance is high and expensive. So people collectively are getting squeezed. So you'll see a surge in people stealing catalytic converters, basically stealing whatever they can get their hands on. And if you're walking down the street and somebody who is short of money sees you, they'll try and take it away from you. And nothing has changed in history. If you think about even Shakespeare plays, they talk about cut purses. And cut purses would be people in Elizabethan times, if you were walking down the street, and because people didn't have pockets, they had a little purse attached to the outside of their clothes, which they would use to take a coin out to buy a loaf of bread or whatever it was. Cut purses are people who would run up with a knife and cut the purse off the person and run away. So mugging has been with us for hundreds of years. It's terrifying if it's somebody in a Mike Myers mask. And I take your point, Kim, that putting on a mask is a way that people hide who they really are. It's an excuse for them to change their behavior and a way for them to go undetected and unrecognized. So all I would say is if you see somebody in a mask coming your way, and even if they're trick-and-treaters coming to your door, I highly recommend, depending on the neighborhood or the world in which you live, but certainly in Los Angeles, unless it's just only children outside, we don't open the door anymore. Or we'll invite them through the door. We leave the candy out. That's the world in which we live, because there are so many people who don't have much money, and they're just looking for ways to take money from people who let their guard down. I mean, that's what I would say about that. Facing mortality. Yes. Let's talk a little bit about seasonal affective disorder. And coming back to that gentleman who's 26, who it's very difficult to persuade him to listen to this show. And one of the great things, Kim, that you do, and I'm honored to share a part in this, is to talk about these issues so that people don't feel alone. There are millions of people who, each year about this time, struggle with depression. And it's not the same as feeling sad or unhappy, and I'm borrowing here from the Johns Hopkins website for those of you who want to look it up, about seasonal affective disorder. And the key things that they say are it is not a sign of personal weakness or a condition that can be willed or wished away. I'll depart now from the Johns Hopkins website. It's a chemical issue where the brain, which has its own little chemical factory that manufactures the chemicals you need to feel balanced and well. And after brain injury, or after enormous amounts of stress, such as Kim, you've been undergoing, the brain might reduce the amount of a particular chemical it produces by a tiny amount. And the function of the brain becomes depressed. The whole functioning of the brain starts to lesson. And people who are feeling this may find it difficult to concentrate, they may underperform at work, they may become irritable, there may be many symptoms, but it's not something that can be wished away. And an example I like to give is that Freud and Jung, the two founders of psychoanalysis and so forth, both started their careers as neurologists, I believe. I've never confirmed this with my own research. I'm relying on what a clinician once told me from their research. So admittedly, this is not my original research, but I believe they both started as neurologists, had a hard time making a living back over 100 years ago. But in order to get the really hot, sexy cases and build names for themselves and become the founders of psychology and so forth, Freud and Jung moved away from neurology towards psychology and giving consultations to Viennese aristocracy on their couch. But what the research has shown, and they believed, by the way, that ultimately psychology would be overtaken by neurology. It's just they didn't have the tools back then to understand the neurology of the brain. But that was their training, and they had the feeling that a lot of these issues, when they were talking about wanting to kill the father and having sex with the mother, all of that, that what they were really dealing with was something to do with neurology. Flash forward 100 years or 200 years, we now know a huge amount more about the neurology of the brain. We are still just touching the surface. There are thousands of different kinds of neurons. I was just reading about yet another research breakthrough where we've all talked in the past about white matter and gray matter. And the researchers have tended to ignore one type of matter in favor of the other. Which one is not relevant for this evening? Because suddenly what researchers are doing is looking at the ignored part of the brain and realizing that that part of the brain, go figure, which is about half of the brain also, is extremely important. It's just not quite as obvious as the other kind of gray matter. So the more that they explore, the more they're understanding that both gray matter and white matter, and understanding it, are essential. But coming back to the person with seasonal affective disorder, women are affected more often than men, just coming back now to the Johns Hopkins website. If you are depressed, if you find that, you need to see a healthcare provider as soon as possible. Without depression, it can last weeks, months, or years. Most people respond well to medication. And to come back now to the research that has been done on people undergoing couch psychological treatments and positive thinking sessions, there have been people who've undergone a tremendous amount of couch psychology and training who still have a reduced level of certain waveforms in their brain that are consistent with, nothing proves anything, that are consistent with medication. You can have lots and lots of therapy and still have a certain level of neurological activity that's measurable in the brain that is indicative of depression. Or you can take medication and very quickly see beneficial effects on the brain waves of that person, which have not changed after a tremendous amount of positive thinking and couch psychology. Now, that's not to recommend one over the other. Many people who do the positive thinking approaches and holistic medicine report that they feel better, but the tendency is that if the underlying causes are not addressed, that they gradually revert to the medium. They revert back to their previous condition until the season changes, until the cause, like the long nights, the level of the sunlight, the kind of interior lighting that we use, people who work under fluorescent lights. I do not. I have filament light bulbs which are being phased out, so I bought a few boxes of them to last me a good long time. But there are many, many elements that contribute to brain health. They include, incidentally, diet. To touch on that briefly, I read a very interesting post on the internet by, I think it was a lady, who reported honestly how she had been vegan when she became a teenager. She adopted the vegan diet. And she started to have issues, different issues, including depression, but medical issues that were not treatable and were not responding well to treatment. And she saw a dietitian. And people become very, it's like a religious belief. And part of the four A's of recovery is awareness. Another one is action. And this young lady became aware of her issues that were increasing and gained information and took action that was personally very difficult for her to do because her diet had become a philosophy. And she had adopted this vegan diet, and a dietitian said to her, you need to be eating, I'll simplify this, eggs, fish, and meat, because you are a human being, you are an omnivore. And it was not an easy thing for her to accept that her medical problems were becoming worse. They were to do with skin and neurological issues and issues of depression and feelings of a complete lack of concentration. And she didn't want to depart from what she had believed was a philosophical truth and a way of life and food that was somehow blessed. It was also not easy for her digestive system to change because the dietitian said, you can't go from having zero meat to meat. And you can't go from having zero eggs and all of the rest. It has to be step by step. And the reason why I particularly am honored by being on this show is it's the chance to share things in detail without cutting to commercial. Because what this lady described on her blog, and I have no way of verifying what she said other than the fact that she decided to post a detailed blog about her experience, was it was not easy, but bit by bit, she went step by step, very gradually introducing a balanced diet, these different foods that she hadn't had since she was a teenager. What surprised her was how quickly she started to feel better, even though she was only changing her diet slowly. And she shared it because she wanted people to know that it's not that you are what you eat. It's not that there are blessed diets and not blessed diets, but what you eat is a continuing search for pleasure and sustenance. And to narrow it down to just a little bit of what's involved, and this, by the way, was a person who was taking the B vitamins, so they thought that they were supplementing effectively their vegan diet. The challenge is that it's not particularly well understood. Everything that we as human beings derived from a balanced diet. We do know that it's more than you get by taking a vitamin supplement every day, which is its own set of problems because the supplements are highly concentrated doses of the substances that have been selected for inclusion in that pill. And every day, your kidneys have to filter it all out. And one of the problems this lady was running into was liver issues because her liver was having difficulty filtering out these concentrated supplements that she was taking every day. So later in the show, we're going to talk about treats because Kim and I were going to talk about costumes and we're going to talk about treats. And I'll talk a little bit about the treat that I used today and use every day. That is why I'm awake and coherent when I still suffer from chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, coming back to your opening comments, Kim, fear at this time of the year. Let's go beyond now the question about people in masks robbing us. And we talked a little bit about seasonal affective disorder. I will say that it usually starts in adulthood. The risk increases with age. It's rare in people under the age of 20. This is from the Johns Hopkins site. And the melatonin has been linked to it. The trouble is, one of the symptoms, it often is called winter depression because it begins late fall to early winter months, eases during the summer months, with spring onset. It's also called summer depression. So you can see that it's a little bit over the map. Common symptoms, increased sleep, daytime drowsiness. These are all you see reflective of a suppression in the activity of the brain. Loss of interest and pleasure in activities formerly enjoyed. Social withdrawal, increased sensitivity to rejection. Particular issue for us in the brain injury community because many of us are alone a lot of the time. Our irritability and anxiety, feelings of guilt and hopelessness. As Kim, you were saying, really important to reach out, whether on the phone or in community meetings, which is difficult during COVID. Fatigue, low energy, decreased sex drive, trouble thinking clearly, increased appetite, especially for sweets and carbohydrates. What's that to do with? Remember that the brain is manufacturing these small amounts of drugs. It is also, to some extent, self-aware. And it starts to send out a signal mixed in with the suppression in function, lower on what I call the slope of consciousness. The brain starts sending out a signal, I need a boost here. I need a boost. And the brain does not distinguish between a good boost and a not so good boost, and a fast fix are sweets and carbs, which cause the sugar rush, can lead to diabetes, and so forth. Physical problems such as headaches, which I could talk a lot about, but we've covered in the past, the symptoms tend to come back and then improve about the same time every year. It may look like other mental conditions, other health conditions. So always see a healthcare provider for a diagnosis. And then it talks about how is it diagnosed, and obviously it's see your doctor. I think that's everything I want to say about seasonal affective disorder. I just want to finish this part with that the main thing is, my main goal and hope, is that everyone listening this evening enjoys this show, does not feel isolated or depressed, or that they're failing their own goals or standards. Because you are not alone, you are one of millions, and recovery to your pre-brain injury performance is a slow and uncertain path. That's what I was saying to the person about 26-year-old, because that is the hardest thing for everyone now. Everybody wants a quick fix. And in terms of the pandemic, we are emerging from the first 3 years, and I just want to say a special word about our military who serve our country, because honestly, I had never given thought to what a three-year tour of duty means for our military under uniform, because we have gone through 3 years, a three-year tour, except we haven't gone, most of us, anywhere. And the pressures of a tour of duty at home are understandable only by reference to what our men and women in uniform go through when they go into harm's way overseas for 3 years. This has been a very hard road. In terms of to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, I am in a cool pool because I am still suffering from panic attacks, and because my brain injury in common with many people, has made me very insecure about things that threaten my identity or my security. I reach for each vaccine that I can, but I also recognize that I have a lot of risk factors. I've been on a ventilator. I have a history of asthma, and I was overweight, and I have successfully brought my weight down now so that my weight is now normal, which is its own journey, but I strongly recommend it to anybody listening. In my case, it was about taking a serious look at my diet and actually eating more slowly, much more slowly. That caused me to eat less, so I ate much more slowly, and caused me actually to enjoy my food more, and I've lost about 12 or 13 pounds. So I've moved, I think, into a safe zone. But
that's
not
great.
Easy for people. Well, it's not, but it's not an easy road. But I also vaccinate in general. I went to a local supermarket, the vaccine that I was waiting for. I don't recommend drugs or courses of treatment for anybody. Always talk to your doctor. But the one I was waiting for came in. I went to my local supermarket, which had it. My local supermarket has a pharmacy. I want to emphasize that. I didn't just go to, you know, the grocery store. I mean, a supermarket that has a pharmacy. A real nurse, you know, injected me. So this was real medicine. And it's been 2 weeks. It really affected me. I know somebody else where the vaccine really affected them. I believe that the consequences of catching COVID, a very good friend of mine just caught COVID. He was fully vaccinated. He said it was 2 weeks of what, and this is just very recent, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week ago. It was 2 weeks of what he described as an ultra bug. And that was fully vaccinated. So he was current with his shots. So although I know that it's politically correct to salute people whatever they decide, I think that there is an element, and I do know people who are strongly of the view that nobody has died of COVID. They all died from hospital infection, from being on a ventilator in hospital. And my answer to that is, well, there's a couple of million people that hospitals seem to have killed, which seems a little surprising. And I've read on this show the account on the internet. Admittedly, it's not somebody I know personally. It's not somebody I've interviewed. You can never convince a skeptic. But I tend to assume that if somebody posts something with their name on the internet, they say that they work in a hospital, and they are describing many, many people who come in and the path, I think it's the 6 stages of death of a COVID patient. I tend to take that at face value and say that's actually a hospital nurse describing many of the people that have come in and followed the paths of death of an unvaccinated COVID patient. And I think at stage 2 or stage 3, the vaccinated go home and the unvaccinated, broadly speaking, go through the remaining steps to their death. But I know it's politically correct to salute people whatever they decide. But I think people who have children and spouses or parents, people who are looking to them just to guide them, they owe a duty to be very careful before they decline an injection and a couple of weeks of perhaps unpleasant symptoms. My arm hurt because my immune system's reacting. It takes 2 weeks for the vaccines to take effect. I'm generalizing across the vaccines. The reason why October is the perfect month for this vaccine, they think, there's no certainties here. That's why the skeptics have a field day, because there's no certainty. It's just the balance of scientific research. But October is the best month because it takes 2 to 3 weeks for the immune system to respond. And I'm still feeding it. I sleep a lot. My arm hurts. I'm very tired, even more tired than usual. That's the miracle of my immune system responding to what my body received, where my body is saying, what the heck is that? What's that protein of the billions of proteins floating around in my body? My immune system is saying, what the heck is that one? It's amazing. It's an amazing, miraculous process of health science. So 2 to 3 weeks of being very sleepy, my arm hurting lasted maybe 48 hours, some strange symptoms, a heart effect, some brain effects, which is again a miracle because it's a dress rehearsal for the real thing, which tells me that if I did not maintain my vaccination and I got COVID, it would affect my heart, probably kill me right there. It would affect my heart, which probably means it would also affect my lungs. And the fact I felt brain effects, not as bad as the previous vaccines this time, they're refining all the time, but tells me that it would affect my brain, that this protein could get into my brain. So even the fake protein entered my brain, and my brain's immune system responded. So it's 2 or 3 weeks of these mild fatigue symptoms in my case, and then full immunity after about 2 months or 3 months, something in that range. What doesn't lie is that they're doing tests of wastewater across the United States. And as probably listeners know, anybody that's got COVID, they go to the bathroom, they shed some virus particles in their waste into the sewage system. It's a bit of a yucky thing, but there are wonderful people, scientists, who go checking the wastewater of different cities across the United States. And the levels of COVID are quite high. I'm simplifying. You can look up the details on the internet, but it's up. So although hospital admissions were declining, it is out there. It's hiding out in probably immune-compromised people who are little incubators for this, because somebody who's immune-compromised can walk around with this virus without symptoms because their immune system is compromised. So it's not saying, what the heck is that? They're compromised, so their immune system isn't particularly disturbed by the presence of the virus. So they are shedding the virus that they can be their carriers, they can infect people they come into contact with no symptoms. But the wastewater tests are showing it is very much present at high levels in our communities. So it's very good to be vaccinated in October because come November, Thanksgiving, December, holidays, gatherings indoors, that's when you'll see, in all likelihood, hospitalization rates climb significantly. And unfortunately, a number of the people in hospital may well die. The blessing is that so many people have been exposed to COVID that they have, although it's a waning immunity, they've got a little bit of residual protection. And a great many people, although it's waned, have received a vaccination, maybe two vaccinations, of out-of-date versions. But nonetheless, although it's waned, they've got some residual protection. Maybe that will save their lives, maybe not. Depends on their age, their other health conditions. It also depends how long were they in contact with the carrier, how much were they in the confined space, how long, how much virus were they exposed to. It's a little bit of the roll of the dice. And I, having been through a lot, and my darling Susanna, who I mention on the show whenever I can, she's had, let's say, an eventful life. and both of us want to continue our lives, and we don't particularly want to die from a bug that could kill us. That said, you have to listen to your body. If you had a previous vaccination and your reaction was one of the statistical rarities where you had a very significant heart response, the inflammation of the heart, there are things that are not well understood. As I say, I had a heart effect from my most recent vaccination, but it was very mild, and I have lots of blood constriction, lots of issues with my blood circulation, so I'm an extreme case. Viral particles, even fake ones, hang around in my body indefinitely. But if you are one of those outliers, if you had myocarditis or any kind of inflammation from the vaccine, you need to consult very carefully with your doctor about whether to have a further vaccination or which one to take, because maybe there's one that would be better for you than the one you had previously. But these are life and death choices, and I probably have spoken much too much about it. I'll finish on a happier note, which is your weather, Kim. The 30s and 40s with a high of 50. How do you guys in the Midwest do it? I'm in California. I wrote to Susanna. I text her every day, many times. It was 70 today. It got up, it was 70 and sunny. And I wrote to Suzanne and I said, it's almost getting to scarf weather because I depend on heat. I don't know how you do it. I am very sensitive to cold because of my compromised circulation. So, and the last thing is, my next medical, it never stops, November 1st, I have an important test, and I'm hoping that the thoracic chief of surgery is going to agree to do a major surgery on me, and I hope in a future installment, as Simon says, to report back how it went. But I'm once again on the leading edge of medicine. I understand what's occurring with me in terms of the need for awareness and action, and what you talked about, Kim, in terms of the long term. 30 years on from my accident, I have learned from a subsequent accident in 2019 that something was disturbed about my polytrauma in 1994, as I say, 30 years ago, that now I'm trying to address, which I think will help me for the next stages of my life and my recovery for an active 2024. But I don't know whether the doctor will agree to do the surgery. She will only do the surgery if she can see what's called a mechanism of action. But this is the second study. The first was with contrast, with a radioactive contrast. This one is without contrast. And I'm hoping that she will go in and that there will be benefits. Otherwise, there will be a readmission for emergency surgery, and it will be a bad situation. But I believe that what I call the hidden path, I dedicated my book to everyone who needs to find the hidden path to full recovery. And I would say the hidden path to full recovery is something for which you do need, as Kim, as you say so rightly, it takes a bit of warrior. You must find the very best and caring doctors that you can. Get more than one opinion if you're not sure. And then do what you think makes the best sense based on what are often contradicting opinions. But back to you, Kim. Your introduction was so wonderful. And I just want to say again, welcome back from your surgery and congratulations, 14 years. Awesome.
Well, thank you. And it was, you know, sometimes we really have to think things through, you know, in that time that I've been a host, and then I'm going to move on to some of the fun stuff. I've had somebody send me a picture, and they are Tom Petty, and they look exactly like Tom Petty. Halloween speaking.
But, awesome.
One of the issues, you know, in that 14 years weekly, and for two of the years, I was doing two shows a week, because for a gold bar, I could not find a Saturday night host when we needed one. And it took me 2 years to find Joey Giggles, who's now been with us quite some time, and is a great Saturday night host. But I was doing interviews, my regular show on Wednesday, and then playing music and just having fun kicked back shows on Saturday. So it's not only the years, but the days. And the only time I've been gone is those handful of times where Gary and I have gotten to, you know, go on our anniversary trip the first week of May, and that's the only time I've been here live the rest of the time. And, you know, the surgery and the fear of what the outcome might be, and the fact that, you know, I've been very careful and out of circulation while COVID has been around, super careful, and have not contracted it that I know of, and neither has my husband in all this time. And so, you know, the thought of going into the hospital and, you know, whether the biopsy was going to be cancer or not, and then becoming a redneck, which many of you have maybe seen or I guess not heard me talk about. But, you know, and then my dad dying at the beginning of the year, losing our dog, just this year has been one of the most difficult years since back in 95 when I had my brain aneurysm. That was super difficult. But, you know, even the end of that year had a happy ending. I got married, not to my husband now. I got divorced 2 years later, but had a beautiful wedding. The wedding was beautiful. The marriage sucked, but the wedding was beautiful. But this year, man, just a culmination of the days past, of COVID, of my dad being ill, of my mom being ill, of changes in our family structure. And then I started getting sick, you know, with things. The eye surgery went on for 6 months, and they botched that. And then, you know, this surgery with the biopsy that I had, and then the rash from hell out of nowhere that there's still no answer to, and we're almost to November. It has been a horrific year, and I ran out of steam. You know, I felt pretty good. August, I was so tired, but I made a commitment to do this show, and I'm also our director of operations, so I don't want to say in charge of, but whatever, I supervise 15 other hosts, And there's so many of them, when they come, they don't cover their slot. They want to be on the air, but they don't put in a tape if they're not going to be there. And they might not come a couple of 3 weeks or so, and they don't call and let me know that they're not going to be there. And we bill ourselves as a 7-night-a-week support network. And if somebody's going to take on the commitment to be part of a 7-night-a-week support network, I think they should cover their slot one way or the other. Or not let it happen more than once. And so August, I did every show except that live, except the last one. You were having your procedure and I was ready to fall on my face. And it was a 5-Wednesday month in August, and it happened to fall on my dad's birthday. That's his first birthday since he passed away, and I think you were having a procedure, so I took that one off and then went into September, and I was spotty. I played a couple of tapes in there, and by that point, I literally couldn't crawl to my computer and deal with the rest of what was on my plate for October. And so I've had tapes on all month, and that's the first time, you know, the first time in all these years that I just
amazing
lost it. Had to take care of myself, I guess, for a moment. And there's no shame in that. I guess what I would say is sometimes that's what you have to do. Now, I did get myself covered. You know, I did have tapes in and called and started those every night I was on. I had someone else change the password for me for a month. So I covered myself before I pushed myself away from the table and needed to take some time to go through some other things. But it's nice to be back tonight, and I'm going to start actively looking for guests and get back in my groove because, you know, the further away your life gets from you, there's some things you can't change, you know, in that serenity prayer, except the things you cannot change. You know, I need to take back the parts of my life that were giving me purpose and fueling me, because the things that were dragging me down, you look at the scales of justice and boom, on the side of things dragging me down, I was completely out of balance. And I need to reclaim some of those things that make me happy, give me purpose. And as far as the shots, and then I want to go on to the fun part of the show, I'll just say one thing you may or may not agree with. But when it comes to the shots, one of the things, this is just something I do, even if it's medication, you know, that is suggested to me, or a new vitamin or whatever it might be, and I do it with vaccines too. I'm seeing a lot of commercials that for the convenience of the places, and 831, I'll bring you on in just a minute. That are suggesting that people get their shots at the same time. You know, flu shot one arm and vaccine the other arm. Or RSV shot. They're really pushing getting multiple shots at the same time. Now, maybe that doesn't hurt you, and I know a lot of people that do it. They've done it while I've been in there getting mine last year. I am cautious, and if something were to go wrong with my health, I would like to know what caused the problem. And if I don't get it done at the same time, then I pretty much know if I have an immediate reaction which shot it was, because I only had one. And so it's just a thought if you're worried about it. And there's no scientific basis for this, I don't think, but I like to put a couple weeks between each one, you know, give it the couple weeks to, if there was going to be any reaction, that's passed, it's kicked in, you said a couple weeks, you know, and then the shot kicks in. And I haven't, because of the surgery and the anesthetic getting put under, I'm late. I haven't started getting my shots, and my doctor strongly suggested that RSV shot, now that it's jumped to adults for this year, even more so than the COVID. I don't know why my mind was full of hearing what I was going to have to be going through in the immediate future, so I only caught that part of what he said. But I've got something that an appointment that I have on Friday, and after that I'll probably get my flu shot, and a couple weeks later go through and get those shots, and I won't be inside with any groups of people, and we'll be acting with caution, you know, before that, before things kick in. So, had a couple comments in the somebody mentioned here that they were traveling out of country and they had to take the shot. They didn't want to have the vaccine, but they were traveling out of country and they got the shot. Someone else was talking about getting a lab draw that hit a nerve and had never felt like that. So in any case, whatever you decide to do, and you might be one of those that goes with the convenience of getting stabbed with everything all at once, but you know, I just want to be able to say if I have a side effect, this is what did it.
I think you can get two shots at the same time. It's not easy to get three. I should clarify, I got the flu and the COVID at the same time because I was in a hurry. I would agree with what you're saying. It's very sensible. But I felt that I was concerned about the timetable, and I was thinking actually about Thanksgiving, and I wanted to leave enough time because I've, since the pandemic began, just if people understand how careful I have been, if that's encouraging or not, I haven't been going to family events unless they're held outside. I haven't been inside with anyone in 3 years. There was a wedding I went to, but it was an outside wedding. I just went for the outside ceremony, not the inside reception. And I was looking forward to Thanksgiving. I felt that the layering of the vaccines, because I've had two shots and this would be my third, I wanted to have as much protection as I could kick in for the 2 or 3 weeks before Thanksgiving, so that I can actually join my family for their Thanksgiving dinner at one of their houses indoors. That was my planning. And the thing I would add to what you're saying is please be aware that there are many people who have died who have, I remember there was one family get together where one person came who had received their vaccine, but it was less than 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the family reunion, and every single person at the family reunion got the COVID and some died from it. So if you're going to do that, just sort of count out the days and make sure that you don't go into a family or a crowded setting before your immunity is set in.
Yeah, we've got another week before.
I have to research RSV myself. I plan to get it, but I just got the flu and the COVID in the first go round.
Yeah, well, we got a week to Halloween and then a couple more weeks to do it. But however you feel right doing it, I just won't. I know what you're saying about counting out the time, but I just won't do two things at once. If I go down, I want to know what did it, you know. But anyway, it's good that you're all taken care of, and we didn't mean to talk about COVID so long. We're talking about fear, natural fear, and in this neck of the woods, it's not like it is in California and other places. Some of you hate to joke about that, about not wanting to get the shot for Halloween, not a treat. Anyway, what was I going to say? I was going to say,
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Great.
Now, does anyone remember? And then let me find. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. Okay, so that's an easy one, and it's not a movie. I scared the people in the chat room, which is what I wanted to do. They said, yeah, it's time for fun now. Who let the dogs out? Very good. That is who the second one was. And, of course, the first part of that, my pretty, was from The Wizard of Oz. And I coupled that with who let the dogs out. So that's absolutely right. Couple of little clues. Yeah, I found that today. I was looking for Halloween songs, and we were going to be talking about movies. Now, that Bow Wow Wow song I've had for a while, but I did get one I'm going to give you a little bit later. I'm going to put out to you. And what was, I've got these under, the only other one some of you know, oh, I'm sorry, 831, I'm going to pick you up. In fact, I'll pick you up now.
Hello?
831, hello? Who's this?
This is Wolf Bukowski.
Wolf!
Hello?
Yes.
Wolf! Welcome to the show.
I'm running out of quarters. I'm down to my last quarter. I've been trying to get through to you.
Well, Wolf, I'll introduce yourself and
yes.
Kim. Oh, this is great.
Simon and I go back to quite a few years ago, and with Connie Martinson's show. By the way, she did a total of 2,000 shows, and I worked on hundreds of them. And she passed away on March 9th. And after I did the very last show that she did at City TV, and she afterwards she more or less retired. I'll tell you more about it later, Simon. But anyway, I'm enjoying the show, and I do have comments about fear and its relativity to the film industry and horror. I mean, the whole idea of the genre of taking fear and horror and everything is a form of cognitive therapy. I mean, it's like mindfulness from the fourth wall. And there you are. You are an obscene observer of all these things, and you are supposed to get vicarious satisfaction for to mollify all your fears and anxiety, and you're seeing it played out so that you don't have to dwell on it. So that's anyway, that's a part of my rambling going on. So anyway, great
talk.
That's
great.
Great hearing you guys.
That's a great contribution.
Yes. Anyway,
well, yeah,
I have.
So wait.
Yes.
Well,
go on,
wait.
Kim.
So you're saying that when you watch horror in the scary movies, that is therapeutic because it's helping purge you of fear by facing your fear or watching the fear?
Yes, go back to the Brothers Grimm. I mean, the fairy tales. I mean, that was to assuage if you can imagine living in those ages where, I mean, as soon as nightfall came, there was everything out there to get you besides your father beating you up to death or drinking himself to death or you drinking to death, I don't know. But the thing is, there were so many more things to kill you off by the age of 25, and so you had to develop the storyteller who would, describe even more horrible things like two children being put in a stove and cooked along with the witch and blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. Anyway, so it is a form of release, but it's a commercial thing that's highly exploited. But the thing is, there is a thing called a cognitive therapy, and there are a lot of psychiatrists that handle fear and loathing and things like that and obsessive behavior, and fear can be handled in various ways. I have a complete list of every Greek word for fear, for example, a fear of doctors is known as atrophobia, and then it just goes on and on and on with that list. But anyways, those are my rambling comments.
Well, I'm so glad
great.
That you.
If I may explain a couple of things for the audience,
yes.
Wolf was referring to Connie Martinson.
Yes.
And Connie
yes.
Martinson was a giant of
yes,
the world
giant.
Of books.
Yes.
And she had a show on cable television for many years, and she interviewed Barack Obama, his book.
Yes.
And every book author in a time when it's very, very hard for authors of books to have any kind of interview, Connie would invite people onto her set.
Oh, yeah.
She would fill your book with her yellow post-it notes.
Yes.
And she would conduct a really serious interview.
Oh, my God.
If anyone is interested, on the website that Kim suggested at the outset, simonlewis.us, if you click on interviews, you can click and see stored, available online, that the three-part interview that Connie Martinson interviewed me, and her book, her show, you can probably find it online, was called Connie Martinson Talks Books. She interviewed Gore Vidal when his book was written.
Gore Vidal, yes.
Say a little bit more, Wolf, because what you did with the show and what all the years you worked on it, it's marvelous. And this is the first time I've ever talked to Wolf. So
yes, we've been trying to know of a. I mean, I've been trying unrequited love to get talk to you and contact you over the years, and I finally figured out the way to call you on the show. By now I had a lot of trouble figuring out how to call in. I realized that you have to press 1 after you dial the number, and I never understood that, but that's perfectly normal for me. But anyway, Connie was doing these shows with her husband, Les Martinson, who died. He was 101 years old, and he directed a lot of movies in the 40s and the 50s. From what I remember, he did the PT-109 and Batman series and piles of other movies. He had quite a career. And whenever we did a show, we always got a book, and my whole house is filled up with these books with the author's signature. And her house, I don't know, you could barely walk through her house because it was just piled up with all these books, these authors, which she covered. I mean, it was quite an experience working with her, and she was such a remarkable person, so informed, and she. What amazed me was that she actually read these books from cover to cover. I mean,
yes.
I just can't think of any of the interviews offhand, but there were so many.
and
that is interesting. I've got a lot of books too. It's nice that the authors send those books out. Out of both of you, I wanted to talk about this. We're going to go on with some Halloween stuff in a minute, but because you're both here, first we had the writer's strike happen, and then the actors followed, and I'm not sure I know the status right now, if they've come to an agreement or if they're all still on strike, but what I am noticing is that it was very easy in the old days for your common television watcher that in the summer it was all reruns. And the one good thing about going into fall, even if you knew you were going to get seasonal affective disorder, is that the new season, you know, for all your favorite shows was going to be on. And it ain't like that anymore. It's been years that it's been like that. You know, COVID screwed up filming for a while, and then, you know, it doesn't sound like it was real bright to go on strike right after 2 years of being off with COVID and then have the actors go too. But now it's really a funky schedule as far as being able to find any continuity, and there might have been 15 episodes in the season back in the time I'm talking about. Now there's maybe eight, you know, seven or eight shows in the season of the shows you can find. And ones you like, and this is a Brain Injury Radio joke, or in my case, and maybe Simon's now too, it could be a brain injury and you're getting older, is that you forget it was one of your favorite shows that's so long until the new season's on. And then you finally see the commercial, you know, that whatever, Law and Order, SVU, whatever, you know, that it's going to be back in March of 2024. And you're like, Jesus, the last one you saw new was 6 months ago. You know, I mean, it's been a year and a half since the last season. So what is the status now of the writers and the actors' strike?
I understand it's settled already, isn't it, with the writers?
The writers are settled, yes.
Yeah.
The actors, they are arguing, and the actors, it's actually kind of interesting because the business is enormously profitable, but it's always going through changes. And there was a meeting where they all came in for the meeting, and the actors thought, Duncan Crabtree is the chief negotiator, and Fran Drescher, the actress, is the president of SAG. And Duncan Crabtree thought, that's not his full name, he's got a double-barreled name, maybe it's Duncan Crabtree Smith, perhaps, something like that. He thought they'd come up with a good suggestion, and they went in for a meeting, oddly enough, not far from where I live in Los Angeles, and the studios said, they finished the meeting early and said, and by the way, we're not coming back. We're not coming back anytime soon. So that wasn't a good answer, was it? So
that's a good negotiator.
Now they're trying to grapple. The issue is money. And as last I read was that the actors want to receive a residual, which the actors say is about 75 cents per subscriber, and or less than a postage stamp per subscriber. And the studios are saying you are taking food from the mouth of our baby children. We can't afford that.
Baby children.
So,
oh, for God's sake.
What baby children?
So,
no kidding.
So
they want a royalty on top of their huge, I mean, they get paid very well, but then they want an ongoing royalty. That's basically what the argument is, because they already make a lot of money. You know, one thing I'd suggest, and it's nothing against just actors, but stores like UGG and Target and football players, a lot of these people, if they would do their job and keep their mouth shut about politics, they might be worth a little more money. But for people like me who think that they are only there to entertain me, I don't give a rat's ass about how they feel about anything. And we were talking about masks earlier, and that's their job, is to put on a mask and be someone other than who they are. So, you know, 101 lesson in this thing that they're arguing for, you know, I wouldn't pay them a royalty to hear their political opinions or anything else. They're there to act. Act. You know.
Well,
do your
job. It ties in with what I was saying earlier in the show about the effects of inflation and high interest rates on people's mortgage payments and also their health insurance, because that's been causing a significant squeeze, especially in California where the cost of living is high. And so how these actors get paid is secondary to just, are they making enough to stay in the game? And one of the, and that's true for the writers as well, but one of the big issues this time around, which is interesting because it has effects on everybody, is artificial intelligence. And one of the issues for the writers, I'm full disclosure, I'm an active member of the Writers Guild of America, so I was a struck writer, and my entity, PFD, was a struck entity. And I can now go back to work. In fact, I've just done a new agreement with the Writers Guild of America for my next informational presentation that I want to do, my medical presentations. But the issue with AI is whether or not you're going to be able to give a rough draft to a computer and then it will for free turn out a completed screenplay. That's been left open, but the Writers Guild have a kind of a discussion now with the studios. But for the actors, it's existential, because the studio's position was, we'd like to bring in actors into a studio and have them consent, pay them $100, and then film them from every angle, have them read two paragraphs, let's say, two paragraphs of text, which contains each vowel sound. And then we'll own that actor's face and likeness, and we can generate that actor saying whatever lines of dialogue we want. And that's not entirely science fiction at this point. And the issue for the SAG, and why I think the argument will go on a bit longer, is if that happens successfully, it's the end, really, of acting as any kind of profession, because many actors who are household names today started out not making a living. I won't go into names because it's not fair to them, but we all know, we've all read stories about actors who were living on somebody's sofa and then a director cast them in a big movie and their careers were made. If those actors coming up today were offered a couple of $100 to take their entire likeness and voice and expression range, and then they could be put into any film, there wouldn't really be an in. They'd all leave. They wouldn't be good actors available. So that's the question that is hanging around. I don't think Kim, although they love arguing about whether it's a postage stamp or $800 million, which Rock Studios said it will cost, that's, I think, the big underlying question. And I think there's genuine uncertainty how to deal with it, because behind the scenes, it's a business which walks both sides of the street. Hollywood is incredibly tough. We're going to talk about a film later on. I mean, my little horror comedy film, which was featured about a year or so ago in a horror film festival in Syracuse, New York. And the director approached me, and I still owned a VHS cassette of me working on the set. One of my brothers came in and came onto the set and took unique footage. So I told the organizer of the festival, he was very excited, and so he said, I'll reimburse you, and I paid a couple hundred dollars to transfer my VHS cassette to whatever medium it was, digital video, for the film festival. So the film festival is held, and I then said, now, here's the receipt for my $200 that I paid for reimbursement of transferring, because everybody at the film festival loved, it's in Syracuse, New York, I think. Everybody at the festival loved the screening. They obtained the 35mm film print of the horror film, the comedy horror film. They shipped the print. They flew the lead actor out to the festival. So I'm waiting for my $200 back, because that was money out of my pocket, to which the organizer of the festival said, oh, well, the festival actually barely broke even. But thank you. That is Hollywood. It's a very tough town. I didn't mind, but it was $200 Hollywood. To be reminded that Hollywood is a very tough town. The other side of it is that nobody wants, although they'll never admit it, nobody wants to force people to the wall. Studios are making billions of dollars. They don't want to crack the door open a chink. They will say that every dollar is money taken from the mouths of their starving babies and all of the rest, at the same time as they'll pay a big star $100 million to be in a film. But nobody wants to make anybody actually go to the wall. And that's the unusual balance of Hollywood. And they're trying to find an answer to this question of artificial intelligence, because everybody knows that there are many actors who are struggling to support their children. They're struggling to pay for health insurance. Many of them do not qualify for the Screen Actors Guild health plan because they don't earn enough. These are artists on the margin. And the question is, and they'd all line up to sell their souls for $150 or $200. They're working as waiters. It's not a glamorous life. Many of them will never make it. So it's an ethical question. But as I say, for the studios, it's, no, we're not going to pay 75 cents. So that's the, but Wolf, what's your perspective?
Well, with regard to AI, I can only bring up the topic of 2001, the HAL computer. If you remember the problem.
Yeah.
With HAL, he said, Dave, I'm sorry, Dave. I can. I have to. Why? Don't turn it off. Don't turn it off, Dave. Don't turn, no, please, Dave, not that button. No, don't. No, Mary had a little lamb. They had to turn them off because of a contradiction called the Hofstadter Möbius loop. of course, that's the writer putting in that ominous warning about a computer that is so AI, so artificially intelligent, that it figures out that something is wrong, that the humans are deceiving him. And I think if AI took over, it would eliminate the human population, mainly because the humans behave so irrationally.
Yeah.
I just look at what's going on. It's just irrational behavior. You have just millions of people with anxiety complex. AI will be run by psychiatrists. You'll be a psychiatric AI process. You know, you go to an AI psychiatrist. You plug it in, and the virtual image will come up, a hologram, and you will be dealing with Hal again, and so on. That's my comment.
I think already go to an AI psychiatrist. I have to check his pulse to see if he's still with me when I'm there, but.
Well, how about going to a doctor where you're sitting in the office, and this is not every doctor, but they're busy punching stuff into their computer and not even knowing you're there. You could walk out and go a little faster and come back, and they'll still be punching stuff in, and because they're specialists. I mean, where's the old-fashioned doctor? Like, I remember when I was a kid, I would walk in, and he'd say, "What do you want?" And I says, "Well, I got to get this certificate for Boy Scout camp." He says, "Do you smoke?" "No." "Do you drink?" "Well, you carouse." Okay, give me the paper. I'll sign it. It was a family doctor. I mean, he knew everything about us. So I don't know if that's possible anymore. That's the good old days, I suppose, but I don't. You have to go to I know I went to a doctor, and he spent more time referring me to different specialists.
I agree with you, Wolf. We're down to, you know, in the doctor's office about 15 minutes, and they do have their face in the computer the whole time, which depersonalizes the whole thing. I had an interesting guest on, a doctor a couple of years ago that was part of a study, and people were talking about the doctors didn't have their nose in an iPad yet, but they were not paying attention, looking up from writing in the file. They just weren't having a rapport there. And what they did is no Marcus Welby stuff. It was gone. And so
that was a great show.
Dr. Maria was part of a study where they put 8x10 photos of the patient right inside the file. And this could be done on the iPad, too. And that was to personalize the information that was written down. And they found that the diagnosis and the treatment and the outcome were all better for the patient in this study where they put the photo in and they personalized everything that was written down.
The word. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. And I can see their point with, thank you for explaining the AI part of it. It's, your intellectual property should be your voice and some of the things that they're talking about. You'd think that would fall into intellectual property and they don't own you, you know, like a slave. But the same, you know, the industries that really are completely different now, apparently acting is one of them, but publishing and music, you know, to be a music artist these days is as harder probably than to be an actor, you know, to the publishing companies, you know, the big houses are losing money. There's still people that are getting books published by them, but because almost anybody can do all the functions of a publishing house these days, they are teetering on laurels and giving the biggest advances to the sure thing, you know, the John Grishams, or the politicians, you know, always with a politician or a celebrity or a proven, you know, they've written 15 books that have been successful. You know, they're not willing to take a chance as much on the newcomer or advance as much on the newcomer. And I was talking to a gal the other day. She got a 2-year contract. She's written a bunch of romance novels. Not my thing, but a lot of people like those. And she had written a few and got a new contract, and she needed to write 3 romance novels in 2 years. And she was going to get something like $15,000. Well, that doesn't seem like much to me.
It's not.
But when I found out, well, it's nothing. You know, 3 books in 2 years, 15 grand is nothing. But what I thought was the bigger sin of it is that she wasn't going to get a dime on sales until she had sold enough books, if she did, to recover the $15,000 advance. So $15,000 period is what she was getting paid, and until when and if she earned $15,000 in sales, her part of the sales commission, if you will, or royalty, she wouldn't be getting paid anything further. And so, you know, it's too bad that the actors are going through those 3 industries, which would be what entertainment industry is really getting turned on its ear and going to be looking a lot different in the future. Before the AI even, I was noticing, you know, we were talking about movies, and the other night I watched a movie called Halloweeny. And it was black and white and animated.
Sure.
And
famous film.
It was I had not seen it before, and you know, I've got a dachshund, and so I, you know, of course I was attracted to it when I was flipping through the guide and saw Halloweeny was on, so we watched that. And And, of course, it wasn't the horror you were talking about, Wolf. I didn't get too scared about it, but I laughed about it. But you think of movies like that and movies, you know, for a while there were a ton of movies like the Toy Story movies, and Disney was
The Exorcist. I mean, why was that so effective? I mean, the beginning of the flick was establishing the situation, and then at a certain point, you were shown that science, modern science, could not decipher what is happening to that child. And you were witnessing this from the fourth wall, and it was so convincing. The doctors were so convincing that they were helpless to explain what is going on. And then there was this one line in the dialogue I'll never forget. The doctor suggests to the mother, "Why don't you go to a priest or something like that, or to someone who, a religious person?" And from then on, If you looked at the newspaper articles about how the audiences reacted to that film, there were people who would actually faint and scream and run out of the theater. And I remember seeing that for the first time, and it was so effective. The thing is, when you get sucked into the storyline and you leave the fourth wall and you are there as a peep watching a show you are watching a lived reality. I mean, it's like the phenomena that happens with a stage play when the acting and the storyline is so effective that it's only happening on the stage, and that moon that's on the set is an artificial moon and everything, but you don't care. You're totally engrossed in this story, and The Exorcist had such an effect. I mean, I remember Blatty was the author of the novel. It's strange because I remember a Groucho Marx show when You Bet Your Life. He was one of the guests on Groucho Marx's show. And the thing is, when Groucho would have this little rapport, you know, talking to the guests, and he would throw a lot of shtick jokes, you know, all his... And then he was talking to what Blatty does for a living, and Blatty says, "I'm writing a novel," and he described The Exorcist. But this was way back in the 50s. It's incredible. You can actually find it on YouTube someplace. But that's the most effective movie or genre that was so effective. Not only affected me, I didn't believe in the devil afterwards, but I felt uncomfortable. And then they had all these stories about the making of it. For example, McGuire, I think he was one of the actors, a very famous Irish actor. He fell down the steps, the very steps where the priest is thrown down the steps in the movie. And he actually died on the set. So there was all this mystique about it going on. You should read it. It's just a strange, strange thing, and it built up such an interest, and then all the sequels came along, and finally the one sequel with Richard Burton was really interesting. I mean, I found it to be a fascinating series because it was based on a lot of Hungarian witchcraft, vampirism, and the consorting with devils stuff, because in Hungarian folklore there's a lot of that, and that's Eastern Europe, but the thing is that was that took place in Eastern Europe throughout the thousands of years. I mean, it's not an old story. It is an old story, and it's nothing new. So,
hey Wolf, wait just 1 minute, please. Wait, everybody, hold it. There's just over 2 minutes left in the show. We do have overtime, but if you want to hear it, you have to call in. So to those in the chat room or anybody listening out there, 424-243-9540. 424-243-9540. If you'd like to hear the rest of the show, as we go into overtime, you have to dial in order to do that. And if you want to talk, press 1, and then in answer to your question, Wolf, the reason people press 1 is I've got a switchboard with numbers in front of me, and a hand goes up if somebody presses 1. But I just want to give people the opportunity to dial in. And thank you in the chat room. I see a couple of people have to go, and so it's really great to be back live. I'll be back next week. I want to thank all of you who were here tonight and that aren't going to be staying on. As always, I appreciate you. I just appreciate you when you're here and hanging with me when I was gone and being back tonight. So good night, and God bless to those of you who are leaving. Have a safe Halloween, but I'll be back next Wednesday with a guest yet to be determined. So I'm just talking while she's at 60 seconds. I just don't want anybody to get cut off in the middle of a sentence. And I will explain, somebody asked a question, and I see I have another caller that I will add with Wolf and Simon. Somebody asked,
Kim, I have to go too. I have one last comment on The Exorcist. When I saw that movie the first time I saw it, it was in German, with German dubbing, which made it even more interesting.
Oh,
well, I got to go,
God.
Too.
Okay, well.
Yeah,
good
night.
Thank you for calling in. Good night,
yeah,
Wolf.
I enjoyed rambling like that, but if you understood what I was talking about, I appreciate it. I don't know.
Oh, I did. Come back again sometime. That
oh,
movie
I will.
Didn't do
I will.
It to
now
me.
That
the
I
movie.
Know, now I know how to operate the computer because my huge iMac went south. I don't know, to hell, yeah, I don't know, someplace like that. But I'm trying to get used to this this laptop, and it's like a lapdog. I you know, it's Microsoft, and that's not my type of computer. I'm an Apple boy. So that's it. Good night. It
takes time to get used to change.
Good
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night, Wolf.
I'll be,
it was
I'll be,
nice
I'll be,
to
I'll
meet
be
you.
Talking to you. Bye.
Look forward. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And Kim, just to correct, I think the film you were talking about was Frankenweenie.
Yes. I'm sorry. Thank you. Frankenweenie. Yes.
That's it, because that's the dog. Yes, Frankenweenie.
God, and I should have remembered that because one of my first dachshund's name was Frank. So Frankenweenie for Halloweenie. The show was on for Halloweenie. Somebody asked a question that I want to address real quick, and then I have a caller I'm going to let come on, and we're not going to be much longer. I just, when we come down to the end of the clock, the show is heard on demand in its entirety. But for the people that are live, you know, it's a two-hour show, and when the clock hits 2 hours, it stops. They can't hear it out there unless they call in. And so people don't get cut off in the middle of a sentence when we're live. Kind of a pet peeve. I just stop it and say goodnight to the people that are leaving. But I looked up and there was 2 minutes. So anyway, it was great to have Wolf call. I had a question that said, what did this have to do with brain injury? And I wanted to explain, it's interesting because for those of you who are regular listeners, we have the preponderance of the shows do directly have to do with brain injury. But when this network got started and it was called Brain Injury Radio, the only requirement was that the hosts have a brain injury. And in fact, the mothership of brain, if you look at brain injury, look at an umbrella, and a spoke of the umbrella is Brain Injury Radio. Another spoke of the umbrella is called People First. The network, the owner of the network's in Spokane. They have a very active support network in Spokane, and People First is the name of an organization there, a help support organization, where they recognize the fact that people aren't defined by their disabilities. They are people first. And so while we do have shows, mostly shows that do directly deal with brain injury in one fashion or another, whether you're a survivor, whether you're a doctor talking about one of the aspects or types of brain injury, survivor or a caregiver. Most of the shows are like that, but as People First, there are other things that we talk about. For example, all of us experience grief, and grief comes in how many different forms. You may grieve the loss of someone, but you get an injury like a heart injury, a brain injury radio, something that changes your life, a come-to-Jesus moment, facing your mortality moment, and it changes you. Things like depression, anxiety, PTSD, grief, sadness, happiness, laughing, holidays, COVID, world wars, they affect all of us. And, you know, there's a lot of special interest groups out there. I brought this up before, too, and it sounds controversial. It's not meant to be, but the BLTS, blah, those letters, Black Lives Matter, whatever the special interest groups are, every single one of those groups has people with disabilities inside them. And are those groups advocating for their members that have disability? No. No, they're not. They're advocating for whatever their main agenda is. But every one of those groups, you can't swing a cat without hitting somebody that has some kind of disability, and they aren't being represented. And so, you know, we do talk about that, but the requirement on the show is that the host have a brain injury. That's how I qualified to be here. It wasn't because I had any experience in broadcasting. I had none. It wasn't because I was computer savvy. I wasn't. Barely knew how to turn on a computer, let alone run a computer. But I do know how to find guests, and some of those guests, not when I have co-hosts. We usually talk about topics. A lot of those have to do with brain injury. And some of them, I have holiday shows for those who have been regular listeners. Every holiday we have for Veterans Day, I always have on a veteran. For Christmas, Valentine's Day, we might be talking about love and different forms of love. That's something that affects everybody. So whether you have a brain injury or you don't have a brain injury, being people first, there are universal topics that touch everyone's life at one time or another. And so sometimes we just talk about things of interest other than what kind of a clip or hardware do you have holding your brains together. So that's a little explanation behind it. You tune in enough times and you're going to hear strictly brain episodes and learn more about the brain. But we do talk about other topics. So I have a caller I'm going to bring on. I hope that answered the question. You go back the couple thousand shows that I have and you'll find that 1,700 of those are directly related to brain injury related topics. The other 300 might be about spirit animals. You know, the fact that there's no more Dr. Welby anymore. The Writers Guild. The Writers Guild. I know that, you know, that's another thing. Entertainment, and especially in our neck of the woods, you know, when we can't get outside, when it's too hard to drive or too cold to drive, we're watching TV. What happened to our favorite show? Well, you know, I've been wanting to know about this writer's strike, and you and I talked about it before, and then you and I both got sick, so it got deferred about 3 months, and as long as Wolf was on too, and you, I was just curious about the writer's strike and the actor's strike. There's a lot of people probably wondering what the hell's going on that didn't even know that either of them were having a strike, you know. But now they know why their agenda is messed up. And I believe you've met Hatter before, but Hatter, welcome. Glad you're here, Tom Petty.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Hello, Hatter.
Hey, hi, Simon. Dr. Simon. Yeah, I think we met one time.
Nice talk.
We were talking about COVID when we talk about COVID and the teams, I sort of backed the professional teams of why they should play together, still play. I wasn't sure that was you.
I don't
might
think
have
so,
been.
But we are here one
well,
another
that's
time.
Okay.
I met you. Glad to see you. Yeah, glad to see you again.
I'm sending him the picture that you sent me of your Tom Petty and you, because you do look startlingly when together with like Tom Petty. So that's interesting. Simon, I sent it to you on your... on your cell phone,
oh my God.
One of them.
Is that you, Hatter? That's amazing.
That's
Tom
Hatter,
Petty.
And that's
amazing.
Yes, yes. What I did for those of you listening is that Hatter sent me a picture of the musician Tom Petty holding his guitar, and he's got a picture holding his guitar, and he looks exactly like Tom Petty. So when I talked earlier about wearing a costume, it was kind of a joke because we're on the radio. Obviously, we're not on YouTube, but I told you to dress up and do a trial run with your Halloween costume. I've got a couch potato Halloween costume on because I've been recovering from a couple things. But then I did send my... my other deal to you guys, that I'm Freya, mother of Thor, so I'm a Viking, and my husband and I went to a small town in Iowa this last weekend that has a real windmill imported, a Dutch windmill imported from Scandinavia in this town in Iowa that has like 500 people in it, and it's pretty cool for a small town in Iowa with virtually no people, obviously predominantly a Danish community, but it's interesting when you look at the history of the Scandinavian population and the Vikings. And when I posted that picture, I said a lot of people would be surprised. I was told that I was Italian and Irish when I was a kid, and I am Italian and Irish. But as I did some genealogy work, I found out that one branch of the Irish, you know, they're Scotland is close by, as you know, Simon, that some of the Irish mixed it up with a couple of the Scottish, so I wound up getting some Scots-Irish. And then I met a DNA match. In fact, he's in California, but I think the San Francisco area, a guy named Greg. And I talked to him, and he wrote this extensive paper after he did extensive research going back, and we're actually related to William the Conqueror. So the Scottish got together with a Viking. Now, a lot of people think of raping, pillaging, brutality when it comes to Vikings, and it's not like there wasn't some of that going on, but the other thing that happened with a lot of the Vikings, what was kind of what happened with the English, I'm sorry, Simon, but when they moved into Northern Ireland, you know, and took over Northern Ireland, after a few generations, those English considered themselves Irish because they had lived there in what was Northern Ireland, you know, at the time. You know, there was the Republic of Ireland, but what they call Londonderry now, the, you know, the Irish still call it Derry. And so it was just kind of funny to find out that Irish and Italian I thought I was since I was a kid that I am, but that the Irish mixed it up with a couple Scottish on one branch of the tree who mixed it up with a couple Vikings who settled. So
interesting.
Just north of Scotland.
Interesting family tree, Kim. And Hassel,
yeah,
you have a great costume. You really, compared with Tom Pett, is amazing.
Well, I was just playing in their gift shop. They have, it was plastic and wooden, but I happened to read a little bit about the about that connection. Well, I read that man's paper, Greg's paper, on William the Conqueror and finding out the relationship, but then also the fact that, you know, I had a notion of Vikings, and I think most people do, you know, especially when Game of Thrones and Vikings and different shows came out, that they were a violent lot of pirates, basically, that came in and trashed land and cities and da-da-da-da-da, just what a lot of people would think. And they actually did settle, you know. Some people can't live on a boat forever, you know. Not even the love boat, you know. So you got to have a place to park your boat and settle. And this place that has the windmill also has a layout. It's really a pretty cool layout of like what an Irish home would look like. And it's built into the dirt, like you'd take a hill and build into the hill to make it like a sod house kind of a thing. And that was where they lived. Which I thought was really interesting, because the Native American people in my neck of the woods, you know, they were showing teepees, a PBS thing I was watching, showing teepees, talking about the Trail of Tears, and I know a lot about that. But they were talking about people having the preconceived notion that Native Americans all lived in teepees. And it showed...
There's two kinds. Two different kinds of Indians. The nomadic, who lived in teepees, and then there were ones who didn't migrate. And they were the ones that lived in the more...
Sod houses.
Yeah, exactly. And building them underground inside of hills made sense. It insulated you. Not only protected you better.
Yes, and that's like...
Interesting.
Lakota and the Sioux,
yeah.
And you're right. They did that here.
Yeah, and even in the desert,
they lived
they
in
the
those
thing,
here.
The desert did the same thing.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that because, you know, you think of Native American and you think of teepee,
that's
but
what we
no,
were taught.
It
that's what we were taught.
Well, yeah, exactly. And when I saw those sod houses, I was, and this is the last comment I'll make on that, and then I'll let you guys talk or make any comments that you have, and then I've got something that I want to play for. No, Simon, that's about 50 miles east of Council Bluffs, so that friend of yours who lives in Glenwood, Iowa, it would be about...
Yeah.
Probably 45 miles east, and it's called Elkhorn, two words, Elkhorn, Iowa. You should tell him to check it out.
I've heard of Elkhorn, Iowa. It's a beautiful photo that you sent me, Kim, just absolutely beautiful. Your photography with the backlight from the sun, lovely.
Thanks. Well, they let you have a tour of the inside of that, and then... The part that comes out to the side is the gift shop, and that's where I stuck on the hat and had the wooden sword I was playing with. But we had this is just really, really fast it is, but the opposite end of our state in the panhandle, I had relatives that came from that neck of the woods, and they actually lived, we're talking about some early 1800s people, they lived in a sod house. So it wasn't just the Native Americans that lived in the sod house. People did. And in 1818 was the horrible tornado. 1947, when my grandma died, I got a bunch of photographs. And then when my parents moved, I got another bin of photographs. God, I've got a lot of photographs. But there's an old black and white from 1947, so I know it was this storm. And it's on YouTube. I couldn't believe it. It was talking about somebody had written a letter about it, but it was the most incredible snowstorm that ever happened in Nebraska. It was in 1947, and it was, I don't know, 5 billion feet. There was cars buried, houses buried, people buried. It came down really hard and really fast, and in 47, you didn't have the same kind of communications, you know, that you have now. And it showed my great-grandma standing on top of the snow on top of her sod house. I mean, she was probably 25 feet of snow. She's standing on the roof of her house.
The reason I'm asking is my mom's side of the family comes from Rushville, which is near Lincoln somewhere, and I've always seen pictures of them as kids, my mom and my uncles and aunts as kids, on these snow berms, these giant snow mounds, and
yeah.
I didn't know that would have been about the time they would have been kids. Interesting.
Well, all of Nebraska snows, but like there's no
right.
people in Nebraska except on the east side of Nebraska, you know, Iowa is on the other side of the Missouri River, and Omaha is right on the river. Lincoln,
okay.
which is the capital, the second largest city, is 45 minutes away to the west. And so
yeah,
we've got here on the east side more people than the entire rest of the state.
Yeah, and Rushville should be near that, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Everything is a small town besides
explains all the pictures
Omaha
I've seen,
and Lincoln.
And all the pictures. Yeah, the big snow mounds. Must have been that snowstorm. They talked about the hail.
1947. We get a lot of hail. Yeah, we get a lot of hail in our storms and tornadoes, but the worst ones that ever happened that are etched in the memories of the old people and the old newspapers, in 1818 on Easter, was the worst tornado that ever happened. It leveled what was the whole city at the time. And that is talked about not only in old newspapers, but the thing on PBS I was watching was a young lady who survived it and wrote a letter to her mother, who must have been in another state, saying she was walking home from church on Easter and thought she heard a sound like a freight train coming behind her and didn't know what it was. And she laid on her face next to, I don't know what, a brick wall or something. Anyway, she was lucky because it leveled the entire town. Now, of course, in 1818, it wasn't a real big town, but it took out the entire town and it killed a lot of people, and so it's still known in the record books as the worst one that ever happened. And then in 1975, I would say would be the second worst, because it went right through the heart of town, and I was alive for that. And here, and it was a big deal when you distinguish it from other ones, because it came right through the heart of town, not in the outlying areas, which is what usually happens. And in fact, we had just moved into our new office building. It was 4 stories tall, had just gotten done getting the new carpet, the paint, moving into this brand new office, getting it furnished, and the tornado sirens went off, and it blew the 4th floor off of our building.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Which
now, is that,
left...
Now, is that a blessing? That's a blessing. It had been...
Well, it's a blessing we weren't there, because a lot of what was on the 3rd floor got sucked out of the thing.
Okay. Can you imagine being the Indians, the Plains Indians, that having these twisters come at night? Or what did they think it was, besides, I'm sure, a spirit? But can you imagine being unprotected at night, having tornadoes rush go by you? How to explain
no.
it, and they didn't know what it was? That must have been frightening.
I'm sure it was a spiritual experience, that's for sure. But that Trail of Tears is an interesting story. And then, Simon, I promise then I will let you go. But, you know, the street, a street that I lived next to, it was the next block over. The name of the street was Poppleton. And Poppleton is a kind of tree in the Midwest. But if you look up Trail of Tears and you look up Standing Bear, there was a famous case after the Trail of Tears, where they gathered up all the Native Americans from this area and marched them barefoot, actually a little more western Nebraska. But there was a fort here that went out, got all the Indians, and marched them to the crappiest place in Oklahoma. And
good God.
It was very important that they liked to be laid to rest in their familiar area, which was a place in western Nebraska called Niobrara. There's a river out there. And cliffs, little cliffs, as much as you get in Nebraska. But that's where they were from, and they marched, and almost most of them died. You know, it went through the winter where they were.
The Badlands?
Badlands.
Isn't that where it ended, South Dakota?
Seems unbelievable now, doesn't it? Unbelievable.
Huh.
The Badlands are in South Dakota, and there's other tribes up there, but there was a lot of them in the Trail of Tears. But these particular ones, the reason why I bring up Standing Bear is that I have a really, well, he passed away a couple years ago, but a sage, wise, older man who was a friend of mine named Bill Poppleton, and his grandfather was the Poppleton, who was governor and an attorney. You'd be interested in this, Simon. You guys can look it up after. But Standing Bear's son died on the walk on the Trail of Tears, and he wanted to go back to Niobrara and bury. He wanted to walk all the way back with his son, his only child, and bury him in their native land. And they weren't going to let that happen. And so Poppleton decides to represent Standing Bear. in the Supreme Court. It goes to the Supreme Court. And there's a very touching speech that Standing Bear makes, that regardless of the color of his skin, he's still a man. An Indian is still a man. And the judge found for Standing Bear and declared that Native Americans were in fact people, not savages.
And in such have constitutional rights and civil rights.
Ooh. Yes. So it's a really great speech, and I just always got a kick out of the fact that my friend Bill Poppleton, that it was his grandfather. I mean, he was an older man. He was in his late 70s to middle 80s when he and I were very good friends and would have lunch, and he was so interesting and knowledgeable about so many things, but what he knew about the history, and to have, you know, a street in town called Poppleton Street. Obviously, they named it after his grandfather.
Yeah.
But that lawsuit, it was really something that he took on. He was willing to take on Standing Bear's case and then prevailed. And the speech that Standing Bear made to the judge, very touching stuff, interesting history. Anyway, so Simon, thank you for being here tonight. Did either of you have anything else you'd like to talk about before I surprise Simon with an outro song?
I think, Kim, that would be great. And Hatter, very, very nice to listen to you and to see your photo. Really, what a wonderful person. Thank you. That was so interesting about what's happened historically with the Native community. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys that will be sure to go research something that's on my mind, and if a fact or something comes across, I tend to. So a lot of trivial history.
No, no,
yeah.
It's interesting.
It was an interesting story before I knew the guy, before I knew the guy, but knowing the guy
Thank
and then
you.
Reading the history was crazy, but that doesn't have anything to do with brain injury either, but we've touched on writers, actors, Halloween, Native Americans, Vikings.
Yeah, and I'm still pondering whether to pick up a show. I'm brain injured.
You are brain injured, and you can do that. I've got
Internet.
A Tuesday open. We can talk about it off the air. I've got shows open. You can have one almost whenever you want.
I'd like to maybe co-host again with you. Yeah, co-host with you first again.
All right. Well, let's do that next week. I don't have a guest.
Okay. That's fine.
Good. All right. Well, we'll think of something to talk about, maybe our brains. But and by the way, Simon, Hatter just had surgery too, so he's with us recovering. So for those of you listening out there, all three of us have brain injury, and all three of us have just been through surgeries of some kind and have been
in recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that was number six for the. That was number six in a row.
Wow. A
lot of surgeries. Now I was thinking about. I played the bit from Oz and the other thing earlier, but Simon is from England, as you might have been able to tell from his accent. So this outro I'm going to play is a little something for Halloween, and I will put it out to to Simon as I say goodnight and God bless. And thank you guys for both being here, and thank you all for listening tonight. I hope you were entertained in some way, whether you had a takeaway epiphany about your brain or not. If it was able to process everything we talked about tonight, you're doing really good.
Really well, yeah.
And happy Halloween. Sing along.
Little old lady got mutilated.